call our next case for the morning. Sortira Labora versus Immigration Customs Enforcement. Give us just a moment. This laser, can it just, it's clearing out behind you.
I'm sorry, yeah.
It's clearing out. Just give us 1 second. All right, you may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Nicolette Glazer. I represent the appellant plaintiff in this matter, Mr. Libarov.
It's a little hard for me to hear you. Can you, yeah.
Yes,
sorry.
Your Honor.
The microphone is not amplifying, it's only recording, so.
Thank you, Your Honors. Is it that better?
A little better, yes.
Congress enacted the Freedom of Information Act in 1966. Against a very vocal and strenuous opposition from the executive and its agencies. Since then, Congress has amended the act multiple times, including in 2007 and 2016, as it relates to this matter, to both repeal restrictive court opinions, as well to emphasize that the purpose and goal of FOIA was to make it easy for requesters to obtain the information that they were seeking. And yet, the district court, at the urging of the defendant, accepted a view of the act, which from the standpoint of a FOIA requester, is basically the prototypical heads I lose, tail you win. I'd like to point to the facts of this case that is somewhat different from the usual FOIA cases that ended up in the district court, which oftenly are related to after the administrative appeal is exhausted, is a question about the search, the proper withholding, and matters that are basically to the whether the agency did what they're supposed to do. In this case.
So what remedy, if we accept that there was a violation, right, of the timing requirement, the 20 days, what remedy at that point was Mr. Liroth entitled to?
Well, from the standpoint of the requester, I think the remedy is a declaration that there is a FOIA violation. And that FOIA, if there is such a finding, then first it sends a very strong message to an agency that they could be held in a declaratory judgment that they violate the act. If you have a multiple of those, it goes to a pattern of practice, which we allege in this complaint in the third count. But more to it, it also makes the FOIA actually a statute, because if there is a judgment in favor of Ms. Libarov or anybody, he will be able to establish much easily that he's a prevailing party and obtain.
But doesn't he receive that by being able to come into federal court?
Well, Your Honor,
as far as this notion that you don't have to exhaust the administrative remedies, you have now access to the court because Immigration Customs Enforcement have violated the timing. I guess I'm going back to what is the remedy that your client would receive based on the timing violation?
Your Honor, if I may, the issue of exhaustion is a sort of a predicate to allow the entity to go to court, or the person to go to court, sort of reaffirms that there is a private cause of action. The question is, once you're in court, what is the remedy that goes once you state, if you state a cause of action for violation? It was, as with any cause of action, if there is a violation, there is a remedy. And the remedy that was put in the act is an injunction relief and declaratory relief. And here—
You said an injunction?
Injunction and a declaratory relief. In here, if the court has accepted our reasoning that once you violate the act, then the court can say you have to produce these records within a time frame, not having 2 years in order to dribble down your response without obtaining an open America stay. In addition to that, if since here we requested the declaratory relief, Mr. Libarov can obtain a declaratory judgment that the act was violated and seek attorney fees. Here, under the precedent of this court and the District of Columbia, it will be a de minimis win if there is any win, because there is no production, or at least there's some production pursuant to a court order, but it will not be, Mr. Libarov is not a prevailing party. We didn't seek attorney fees because under the precedent, you cannot obtain it. What the ticket to court means is the requester will have to hire an attorney, spend 2 years in district court only to wait for the agency to come at their timeline, produce an interim response, and then obtain a judgment in their favor. Once they obtain a judgment in their favor, presumably they're entitled to their cost. So not only Mr. Libarov not obtained what he was seeking, the court found that he's not entitled to more, but he spent 2 years litigating and could be paying the government cost, may not be big cost, but still cost for daring to go to court. That's what the ticket to court approach of the district court means, set to its bottom. Whereas the act was specific.
So I want to make sure I understand your argument, Ms. Glazer, is are you representing that because there was a violation of the timing requirement that the government agency has accepted, that the remedy, once coming to court, is requiring the agency under FOIA to pay attorney's fees?
No, the remedy is to find that there is a violation and then put an order on the agency to do what the court finds it was not being done. Respond, issue a final determination, and then if there is a final determination that is not completely satisfactory to the requester, then that requester will be able to appeal within the agency. So the remedy is to come in and say, you have X amount of time to produce a final determination and spell and put everything that the act required to put in that final determination. Now, it is the agency to do that, including to put in it, here's your final determination, the court ordered it, you have the right to do this, this, that, and then perhaps appeal with the agency. What happens with these FOIA cases when they end up in court is that none of these additional rights or safeguard or safe rail that were put by Congress in the act to allow a requester a quick and expeditious sort of conversation with the agency to obtain the relief is completely evaporated. Because once a person gets in court, the only question is how long it will take for the agency to say, we conducted the search, here's the document, and ultimately get a judgment in their favor. Because the way the courts are seeing it is, even if the requester wins something, and they says, we need to do a modern search, the next step is the agency coming up with another motion for summary judgment until there is nothing else left, and then the judgment is in their favor. And so the argument that we are making is that could not have been the intent of Congress. Providing a private remedy and a private cause of action, which allows the requester to go to court and to obtain a de novo review and prospective injunctive relief, it means one thing, and that is, once you go to court, the court has to look, did the agency do something to violate the act? If it did so, it should issue a judgment and order the agency to do what they have not done, including issue a final determination, which was central to the amendments of Congress by adding more layers of what needs to be done with that final determination, which consummate the agency action. And again, it's the agency and their expertise that is required in order to decide which component to search, who to search, how to search. That's something that is reserved for the agency. And the agency, once it completes that task, it has to provide to the requester and the court the final determination so that there could be an expeditious and central determination as to, is there anything that the agency didn't do right?
Ms. Glazer, could I ask you, is there anything about the agency's search carried out in this case that you are challenging at this point?
No, Your Honor, we did
okay,
not.
I guess I'm at the risk of repeating my colleague's question, I'm trying to understand what further relief Mr. Libarov wants at this point.
Well, with respect to the document that was produced, we are seeking the court to find that Exemption 7A was not properly approved.
Right. Okay. I understand that. Anything else?
We ask the court to issue, or direct the court to issue a declaratory judgment that the act was violated and the agency should issue a final determination. All they issued is an interim determination that says
But your brief says that the agency has already issued a determination.
They issue an interim determination.
That's not what your brief says. Your brief says they entered a determination after we filed for summary judgment.
That is correct.
So they have issued a determination.
That's correct. In response to the motion for summary judgment, they issue an interim determination, not a final determination.
So now you're representing before the court that the determination was interim.
That is correct. And that is actually part of the motion for summary judgment, and the government does not contest that it's an interim decision. In fact, it says
Let's go back. So the relief that you're wanting is a declaratory judgment. Go ahead. I'm sorry, I interrupted.
A declaratory judgment and an injunction, prospective injunction, that the agency issue a final determination. That, because in the interim they said, once we complete the investigation and the investigation is no longer open, we may assert further exemption, including 7C, 7D, and exemption 6. So what they admitted in their determination that was in response to our motion for summary judgment, that what they've said, this is the one document and we're going to withhold it in full, is not the end of their final action, because they claim that it's an open investigation. By their own terminology and representation, once this investigation is no longer open and exemption 7A, which they asserted does not apply any longer, then they say, we'll come in and decide what we're going to do at that time, and there may be other documents. So what we raise in our brief is that there is nothing in the act and nothing in the response that suggests that a agency can obtain a judgment in their favor for an interim step, which is an interim decision, saying, so far this is what we have, we're going to get a judgment, and then maybe we'll respond to you later. There is nothing that I have found that sanctioned that sort of an intermediary response and obtain a judgment. We see those interim responses all the time in FOIA cases, but the search continues, the production continues. It's just the 150 pages that we have processed pursuant to a court order that we are producing to the requester. But once they complete all the production and all the exemption, they will normally come in and say, here's a final decision. There is nothing else to produce. All the exemptions have been applied. This is the end, the consummation of our duties under the act. And then the issue, the legal issue as to, is there anything left for the district court to remedy with a prospective injunction, comes into place. We didn't get to that point because they came in with an interim response. If I very quickly can touch on the 7A exemption, which is the count 2 that was asserted in the complaint. Again, the main issue is that we have an interim response, but beyond that, we respectfully ask the court to perhaps, considering the fact of this case, at least explain further the two-step approach that this court applies to summary judgment in FOIA cases. And the level that kind of drops down from the regular Rule 56 burden is with respect to the exemption, that clear error portion. And we respectfully ask the court to consider that, since it is the burden of the defendant at all times to prove and establish that they have satisfied the requirement for a 7A or any other exemption, when, as in here, we moved for a summary judgment under Celotex, pointing that they could not come up with enough proof. Because they bear the burden of proof at trial, then it is their burden to come with a...
What do we do with Henson, though? Our Henson case, where we say, affidavit, sworn affidavit, Vaughn Index, in-camera review by the district court. there's enough there for the district court to make a decision as to whether or not the exemption was proper.
Correct. Well, I think once the district court made that determination, that we ask that the court find that, as with any summary judgment, the court is a de novo review. So the court makes an independent judgment.
So you're asking us to overturn Henson and move from clear error to de novo.
Or at least clarify that that may not be always applicable when there are cross motion for summary judgment and when the requester, like we did here, filed a motion saying you don't have proof to show that you have that you have properly used an exemption because of the time they haven't done anything. And then it is the burden of proof on the defendant, who has the burden at trial of persuasion and proof, to come with the material evidence. And so under the clear judgment, a requester like us will lose that de novo review. If the court is to review and says they're not, you came in and you show that there is that you overcome the presumption, there is a genuine issue of material fact, then that's the end of the record. But here, we filed a motion, they filed their own motion. The court did not apply Celotex to our motion and found that they have met the requirement to obtain a judgment. So what we ask is not to overrule Henson, but to perhaps explain that that may not always be faithful to Celotex in circumstances where the requester is coming up and saying, we're making a showing that you do not have enough to meet your burden when the defendant has the burden of proof. And I apologize, I'm out of time.
Thank you, Ms. Glazer.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Good morning.
May it please the court, Alexander DeBobbinori for United States Immigration and Customs Enforcement. I just want to start with the colloquy you all had with my colleague about the determination. So the D.C. Circuit has held that a determination comprises three different parts. It is the gathering and review of the documents. It is communication about the scope of the documents that have been found and the withholdings that the agency seeks to assert. And then three, information about the appeal rights. Here, ICE has clearly done the first two steps. It has gathered and reviewed documents. Plaintiff no longer has any objection to the adequacy of the search, and the district court has held that the search was adequate. The agency has also communicated the full scope of the documents that it found and has provided information about the exemptions that it is asserting. So at this point, there really is no other determination as a practical matter that the agency could provide. And as the D.C. Circuit explained in Crewe, the reason for that determination is to provide either the agency through its administrative review process or the court with reasons to review. And here, clearly, the district court has had the reasons that the agency is asserting the exemption. On the matter of the declaratory judgment, this court is squarely held in Walsh in a very similar case as this one, that once an agency has produced the requested records, that is all the FOIA requester is entitled to. In that case, there were two tranches of documents, and the plaintiff received one tranche, understood there to be remaining documents, received those after, I think it was a year delay, and then came and asked this court for a declaratory judgment about that delay. And the court said that the case was moot. And here, the same thing holds. There's no relief that the court can provide that wouldn't be anything but advisory. Declaratory judgments are not sort of roving licenses to declare wrongs in the past. Their primary impact is to change the behavior of the defendant in the future. And here, there's nothing that can be done to erase the delay that has already occurred.
Counsel, could I ask you, this was something that occurred to me during your opposing counsel's presentation, but if the government blows the statutory deadlines, as apparently happened here, and then produces the document during litigation, rendering the case moot, would the government then, do you think, be in a position to seek costs as a prevailing party because the case is now moot?
I'm not sure whether the government could seek costs and how.
That would be very troubling to me.
Yeah, I understand that concern. I'm not sure That hasn't occurred. That argument sort of wasn't raised in the appellant's brief about sort of the implication of these matters on costs, and so I don't have any more information on that. What I can say is that, you know, the D.C. Circuit has made clear what the purpose of the 20-day deadline is, and the penalty to the agency really is its inability to stop judicial review. Once the 20 days or potentially 30 days, if the agency invokes unusual circumstances, has elapsed, that obviously provides the plaintiff the ability and the recourse to go to district court. And at that point, you have a pragmatic process where the district court supervises production deadlines, can compel the release of documents improperly withheld. That is the purpose of that deadline in the statutory regime.
Could I also ask you, as I understand it, we're down to 1 6-page document.
Correct.
And 5 of those pages have been disclosed, is that right? Or
a large majority of the pages have been disclosed. The district court ordered the disclosure of, I believe it was all the sort of segregable personal information the plaintiff already had. So it's about 5 of the pages, yes.
So it's really about the 6th page.
Essentially, yes. There's a small point on one, yeah.
And what can you tell us about why that's all still so sensitive that it cannot be disclosed?
Sure. So on the Exemption 7A issue, as Judge Pryor mentioned, really the agency provides sort of 3 categories of justification for its additional withholdings. The first is the Vaughn Index, which categorizes this document as a Homeland Security Investigations Report, and as this court and the Supreme Court have held, the agencies can show generalized showing of harm over categories of documents if those categories of documents generally would interfere with contemplated enforcement proceedings. Here, a Homeland Security document is obviously the type of document that is generated.
I understand categorically and in general. Sure. I'm just looking at this document and wondering what's so sensitive about this.
Mm-hmm. So as the agency attested, there is an open investigation currently, and this document is related to that investigation. And as the declaration sort of notes, this document could provide information about how that investigation came about. It also could disclose information on techniques and practices, which I know is a 7E concern typically, but you know, just as a matter of interference with the ongoing investigation and potential enforcement proceedings could also be relevant. And it could, you know, aid subjects of the investigation in evading or circumventing law enforcement. So those are the reasons that...
I understand all that in theory. I'm not asking you to disclose anything that would render the whole issue moot.
Sure.
But I'm still struggling to try to understand what in this page is so sensitive.
Yeah, it's difficult to discuss in open court without more, and I think this is sort of the difficulty that the agencies typically face in 7A issues, is you can't necessarily put the level of detail on the public record that is necessary. I think here the agency is relying on the inference the district court made viewing the document in camera about how this document could reveal the scope of the investigation, targets of the investigation, et cetera. Now, of course, if you remain unsatisfied with that showing, then I think that the typical remedy, the appropriate remedy here, would be to remand to the district court with the instructions to ask the agency to go back and provide further information on the record. And the agency could also do so ex parte if needed to provide more explanation on the particular open investigation. I also just want to mention just a couple other points. Plaintiff on appeal raises for the first time the foreseeable harm standard. I think that issue is forfeited. It wasn't raised before the district court. The district court didn't address it. And it was really raised in a perfunctory manner on appeal in only a couple of sentences. So I don't think the court has to reach that issue and how the foreseeable harm standard interacts with Exemption 7A. I would also say that, you know, plaintiff...
There's a request for declaratory judgment, though, mm-hmm. that Mr. Lerwolf receives from the court saying, yes, ICE violated FOIA. Yeah.
I think that would plainly be an advisory opinion. I don't think that would provide any kind of remedy here. The remedy, as this court made clear in Walsh, is an order compelling documents. That is what plaintiff at Bottom seeks here. If you read the complaint, if you read how the summary judgment motions were litigated, and even on appeal, this is really a case about one document, one six-page document of which there are some remaining exemptions. So that is the, in practice, remedy that the plaintiff seeks here. As to the sort of allegations of pattern or practice, similarly here, plaintiff wouldn't have standing to bring that type of a claim, which I think would be improper under the APA, but even if brought under FOIA's pattern or as a FOIA pattern or practice claim, plaintiff provides no information in the record that there are any other pending FOIA requests, that they've ever submitted a previous FOIA request and received a delay like this, or that there are any future planned requests. Again, this is really a case that boils down to one remaining document with some redactions, and that's the issue before the court. If there are no other questions, then thank you so much.
Thank you. All right. That's all the time that we have. Ms. Glazer, I'll go ahead and give you 1 minute for rebuttal.
I will use my 1 minute to read from the interim response because I didn't have it, and that's what the government put in response. Be advised that once all pending matters are resolved and FOIA exemption 7A is no longer applicable, there may be other exemption which would be protected certain information from disclosure, such as FOIA exemption 6, 7C, 7D, 7E, and 7F. This is what they put in the interim response, and they obtained judgment in their favor on this response, basically saying once the investigation is closed, we may be able to do something else to complete your request, but we're not gonna do it now, and now that we have a judgment against you, there is no reason for us to do it. And that goes to the core of this case, and that is if there is permission for them to do so, then the act, stripped from the requirement for final determination, will be completely illusory. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take the case under advisement, and thank you both counsel for the presentations this morning. We have United States versus Larry Doss.